and I was just devoting too much space in my wardrobe to purchases that led me to feel really empty. And I really wanted to develop more of a relationship with what I was wearing.
You're listening to Made Better, a show exploring the power of creating and consuming more consciously for a healthier planet and perspective. I'm your host, Susanna Jaffa. Each episode, I connect with inspiring individuals to chat about the impact of what we wear, from clothing to cosmetics, and discuss how we can all journey to making better choices and why it matters. Join us each week as we shift the narrative around consumption, one conversation at a time. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. First of all, I just wanted to say a big thank you to all of your kind feedback for our first few episodes. It really means a lot that you're listening in, so thank you. If you're new here, you can head on over to episode 1, where we give an intro to what this podcast is all about. In our last episode, where we chatted with Francisca Pineda, the founder of vegan fashion label Bava, we touched on how game-changing it would be if more brands made information public about how and potentially at what scale they produce their products. This was in response to us discussing the increasing number of fast fashion brands releasing sustainable, conscious collections, which are often far cheaper than those of independent designers. What many people don't realize is the sheer volume at which these collections are made and sold, basically like the quantities of the rest of their fast fashion business. And because it's produced at such a massive, wasteful scale, the manufacturing price and therefore the in-store cost price can be driven down. This perspective isn't necessarily something that's mainstream knowledge for everyday shoppers, so it makes it harder for smaller businesses to justify their prices. Given that and the fact that ultra-fast fashion platforms like Shein, Boohoo, and Pretty Little Thing are constantly ripping off the original designs of smaller brands, that's a talking point for a whole other episode, it's tough out there for independents right now. That's why this week we're talking all about transparency and traceability in fashion, two big, important topics that continually crop up in any conversation about making the industry more sustainable. Often, these two terms have been used interchangeably, but I think there are some clear differences. Transparency usually relates to a brand sharing solid information about where, how, and under what conditions their products are made. These could include the names or locations of their producers, certifications, and materials. Traceability, on the other hand, is kind of like an enabler to transparency, capturing more nitty, gritty, granular data. More of a zoomed-in look of a brand's supply chain. Think where the cotton fiber for a dress is actually grown and harvested. Why do these details even matter? A lack of transparency is really what's made the workings of the fashion industry so infamously opaque. Not disclosing where, how, and under what conditions products are made is one of the reasons some of the world's biggest brands, from ultra-fast fashion to luxury, have been able to get away with massive levels of labor exploitation and pollution. On the surface, we just see what they want us to see. Beautiful collections and the finished products in store or online, topped off with a sprinkling of glossy advertising. The behind the scenes is often a lot more ugly. For brands who genuinely care about sustainability, transparency and traceability are top of the agenda to champion a kinder, fairer fashion system. Sharing this information lifts the veil on the inner workings of the industry and helps to remind us how interconnected the making of clothes is with the well-being of people and planet. This week's guest has been a big, big advocate for the above through her work as a designer. Alicia C. is a founder of Essie, a fashion label on a mission to create clothing in a more intentional, environmentally conscious way. The brand blends timeless design with a more transparent, traceable supply chain, all with the goal of creating beautiful, wearable pieces while creating a positive ripple effect in the industry. We chat about her personal journey to becoming a slow fashion entrepreneur, why she's laser focused on perfecting her designs to the point that she's moving beyond pre-order to made to order, how we can try to navigate and avoid greenwashing and clear washing, and how she tries to balance being sustainable while trying to grow and scale. Hey, Alicia, and welcome to the show.
Hey, Susanna. Thanks so much for having me on board. I'm really excited to be on the show.
Yes, as you know, we've been working together and following each other's brands, and I feel like you've been such a big part of
my journey as an entrepreneur as well, and the journey I've been on with Zerin. So I'm so thrilled to have you and excited to chat about all things SE and transparency. So maybe what you could start with is, yes, sharing more about your story and your personal journey.
Yeah, so the journey takes me way back to when I was a fashion victim and I was really chasing trends mindlessly. And the sustainability route was just not something I gravitated towards initially. I think it came about through a combination of experiences. Back then, I was really kind of quite a shopaholic. So my wardrobe was just filled with clothes. And over time, I realized, these were made very badly. And I was just devoting too much space in my wardrobe to purchases that led me to feel really empty. And I really wanted to develop more of a relationship with what I was wearing. And back then as well, I was working with a luxury fashion company. I think this kind of epiphany hit me when I visited their warehouse and I saw the sheer amount of inventory and dead stock just sitting in a warehouse. And it made me realize how the fashion industry is still such a trendless industry, where there would just be like always new drops of clothes and new season, new collections of clothing. And the old styles would just be cast out, leading to a lot of overproduction and waste and excess inventory, and also training us as consumers to have this very disposable mindset. I felt like there was a real disconnect between the beauty of the product from an aesthetic point of view, that glossy exterior, versus what was happening behind the scenes. And that made me kind of start to research and dig deeper. And what I found out was that, there was actually a lot going on behind the scenes. And the fashion industry really played a really huge part in impacting the environment and humanity in a really negative way. And I think going down that rabbit hole and uncovering all these truths, I really could not turn a blind eye to it. And it made me want to embark on a journey to create a fashion label that's better for the planet and people.
Amazing. I think that it's a really incredible experience to have worked within the fashion industry and kind of had that insider knowledge of how things actually work. I think my experience was the same in many ways, but coming from the angle as a fashion editor. So you kind of experience things that you don't expect, and far more than just being a consumer of fashion. And I think that it's definitely really eye-opening. So with SE, one thing that you really focus on yourself and as a designer is creating signature styles, and you're constantly refining these signature styles based on community feedback. You also share on your website and across your socials a key message is that you reject trends and are all about classics. Could you share more about this philosophy and process and how it's defined your work?
Yeah, so I think my personal philosophy, and I think our design philosophy, is that, a piece of garment is supposed to be loved for a long time, and you're supposed to develop a relationship with it, and it will take you through seasons, special moments in life. Yeah, so it's meant to last. And I think that's always been the ethos behind the design philosophy. And I guess when I had that moment as well, it really changed the way that I chose my garments as well, and the way I chose to dress. So that's really, I think, the main philosophy behind our designs. And in terms of, I guess, our brand principles, we really want to create the best product. And I think that's a huge part of the sustainability conversation, because high quality products naturally last longer. And that's converse from like fast fashion brands that, kind of champion like disposable fashion that goes out of trend really quickly. I guess our journey in terms of where we started, we actually just started with three products. In our range, we launched one really tiny capsule. And moving forward as well, as we progressed as a brand, we kind of rejected the idea of launching seasonal collections, but instead focused on launching like small capsules that are made out of 2 to 3 plant seasonal designs. So over the years, I mean, these have become our signatures. And the interesting thing is that some of the best-selling and most popular styles today were launched back in 2017, and they're really well-loved. So I think that really speaks to a timeless and wearable design.
And I understand you're often seeking feedback from your customers as to what are their favorite designs. And also you're looking at your bestsellers and tweaking the fit over the years so that you can continually refine them. Has that been an interesting experience for you? How has that been in terms of customer response?
So I think it's been really good. Part of our design process is guided by feedback from our customers. We have quite an informal but continuous feedback loop with our customers. And we try to always take the feedback that we've received and try to fold it into our design process. So people will DM us on Instagram, or they'll email us about what they like and what they don't. And also during appointments at our studio, we try to get to know our customers better. So we ask them, you know, what their lifestyle is like, what they are planning to wear the pieces for, and we take notes. And I think because we document that feedback we've collected, I can go back and say, you know, like, hey, this seems to be a recurring issue. Maybe we can improve it in the next design iteration. So that's been a huge part of our design process. So we actually, one of our pieces, the tieback halter top, which is one of our signature styles that we launched in 2018. In the first iteration, we actually received a lot of customer feedback on how the straps were like loosening up because of wear and tear to the keyhole that holds up the straps. So we took all the feedback and we went back to the drawing board, and we worked with the makers to improve the keyhole and strap design while keeping the overall aesthetic of the piece similar. And that actually kind of improved the product and extended the lifespan. So I think from a design perspective, yes, we do look at the aesthetics, but I think function and fit so that the product is more long-lasting, it's also really important. And that's a huge part of our design process, like just innovating, iterating, and just improving our product. And that's really important because it's also very different from a fast fashion brand, because they have such large collections. They have so many products that they don't really have time to gather all their feedback and, you know, like improve on their design. Their focus is just like churning out what's new and trendy for the new season in the shortest time span. So as a brand that champions slow fashion, I think that's really an important part. Just also taking into account customer feedback and using it to improve on the design.
Totally. I think it's a really important part of building a brand that is ultimately trying to create more consciously and brands. And ultimately, you're creating products that are going to last people longer because they fit well and they're going to love to wear them again and again. And another important part of your business is sustainability and sustainable practices. But this space can feel very overwhelming, especially due to issues like greenwashing and clear washing. I'd love to know what advice you would share when it comes to navigating this space. And maybe you could explain a little bit about what greenwashing and clearwashing also means to you.
So, yeah, I think greenwashing is it's so prevalent now that even the most discerning customers can find it quite challenging to kind of differentiate between a brand that is actually taking a step to become more sustainable, as opposed to one that's just using it as the product is green. Clear washing takes it one step further, and it's actually happening a lot in the fashion industry now. I think brands have gotten a lot smarter, and so they're just kind of reaping the marketing benefits of being transparent without actually taking any tangible action. So yeah, it's really hard for customers to kind of be discerning and kind of differentiate brands that are actually walking the talk. And I think from a brand perspective, the baseline of where to start, I would say, is really to practice what you preach. So if you are a brand that wants to position yourself on being sustainable, ethical, or green, then you have to walk the talk instead of just using it as a marketing tool, because then you're just self up for failure. And I think customers these days are really savvy as well. So they do appreciate honesty. They do appreciate brands that open up about their limitations and about the challenges that they face. And also, I think sustainability is a work in progress. So a brand needs to consistently work on it. It's not just something that they can achieve overnight. And I think customers can tell, or consumers can tell, if a brand is being honest about the sustainable practices when they see the brand consistently trying to improve and communicate their progress. So I think those are some clear signs of brands that are really trying to be sustainable, and it's always a work in progress. So from a brand perspective, it's, you know, just consistently working at it and being honest and open about challenges. And from a consumer perspective, it's really asking the brand's questions about you know, what they're doing, and seeing if that's something that they're consistently doing and it's not just a one-off thing.
Thanks for sharing. I think that is really useful advice. And yeah, I think it's a big conversation in the sustainability space right now. We have that conversation with customers about people feeling overwhelmed and not sure about what brands to support. And I think there's so much information now on social media too that is thrown around about this brand has done this, but how green is this? Or now all of these sportswear brands are using recycled material, but are they actually eco-friendly? Yeah, it can be a very confusing space. So I think really looking at details and ultimately maybe asking brands if you're not sure as a consumer is one way forward as well.
Yeah. And I think if we do touch on transparency, it's a moving target. And I think in the past, you know, like brands talked about their first-tier suppliers and where their products are made, that seemed like the new frontier of transparency. But right now, it's really just a basic hygiene factor, like table stakes. You know, transparency is really moving towards brands providing more granular information. For example, like the climate impact of their clothes, or like the second tier supplier, and really tracing their supply chain and getting to grips with environmental accounting. So I think as we progress, it's going to be more challenging for brands. Like, they really need to like be able to back up their claims, and customers will want to see that as well, that they have the information and data to back up all these things that they're saying. And it's not just going to be marketing speak anymore. Like, you can't just slap a label and call a product sustainable.
Yeah, here's to that, more of that in 2022. Yeah. And on that note, actually, Essie, you recently published a 2021 progress report for the brand, which outlined your environmental and social goals, the ones that you reached, and also the ones that you're setting out for this year, 2022. I've read the report and I found the information really comprehensive, and I'd love to learn more about it and to dive a bit deeper into why transparency and traceability is so important to you.
Yeah, so I think that was a really daunting task. I guess just to kind of go back on what I said previously about, you know, like backing up your claims, That's one of the reasons why we decided to take a step in this direction to kind of establish sustainability goals and create our first progress report, started at the beginning of 2021, when we decided to outline our sustainability goals for the year. And I think the reason behind setting these goals was really to help us create a clear roadmap of where we wanted our brand to be in a year's time in terms of sustainability, and also stay focused on achieving these goals. Yeah, and just basically help us with decision making and setting standards to measure ourselves against, so we're not just like feeling around in the dark. And I think for a small independent fashion brand, it can be quite overwhelming when you think about sustainability, because there are so many parts to it, and obviously we can't tackle everything, and we have to prioritize and choose the areas that we can look into and that we can focus on. I guess with the sustainability goals, the progress report really felt like a natural step, because we could report on the work that we've done for the year and also hold ourselves accountable to our stakeholders. Also, I felt like it was a real natural step, because when we look at regular businesses, when we speak of the bottom line, we usually look at profits and they usually have a financial report. So as a business, we adopt a triple bottom line approach. So it makes sense to have a progress report that looks at, you know, just beyond profit, but includes the social and environmental issues that really measures the full cost of doing a business and shows how we, you know, interact with the environment and how we interact socially as well. So yeah, I think with the progress report, we did this where we focused on our main sustainability pillars, which the environmental pillars and the social pillars. And we tried to measure ourselves again how we've performed in terms of meeting our base social and environmental goals. So for example, you know, like working with ethical makers, who are our first-tier supplier, fabric usage, like how much of the fabric we're using is Tencel, organic cotton, linen, and so on, as well as our specific goals for the year. So last year, we wanted to launch a repair program, which we managed to, and transition towards using more responsibly sourced trim, which we didn't quite hit, which you would have read in the progress report. That was what we kind of communicated to our customers and what we wanted to kind of share in terms of where we're at. I think that progress report was really important because it helped us to put all the information and data that we gathered together, and it's backed up by numbers as well as data and as well as like focus group surveys that we've done in 2021 to show where we are as a brand and where we are moving towards in terms of sustainability. So to answer your question, transparency and traceability, I guess, are important because they stay accountable to ourselves as well as our customers. And with traceability, we can use all the insights and the data that we've gleaned to understand how we can manage our social and environmental impact and how we want to go about achieving our goals. And transparency is important because it shows that we're honest and open about communicating with our stakeholders, and it helps us to build trust of customers as well.
Those are all really, really important points. And I can imagine that a long time for you to put together, but I think at the same time, what a lot of the fashion industry lacks is data, and especially for a smaller independent brand to be able to track that, I think is fantastic and worth the effort to kind of improve your own internal practices, because without that, I guess you're kind of making decisions based on anecdotal stuff.
Yep.
You know, I think that's really, really important. And I'm sure there are brands listening to this now who are wanting to hop on, and even shoppers who wanted to hop on to read that. We'll link it in the show notes, but it's definitely worth a read. And I think it's also just goes to show how much detail goes in to creating a more consciously made fashion label, the things that you're thinking about, yes, from fabric sourcing, but, you know, like you say, second, third tier suppliers, trims, all of those different aspects that come into the finished product that you just don't normally hear about from behind the scenes. So yeah, well done.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, it was a really long process. I think we planned to have this progress report at the beginning of 2021, and I think it was about 6 months or so to collect all the information and kind of map and just kind of put it in a digestible format so we could understand it and our customers could understand it. And I think being a first progress report, it still feels like we have a long way to go. Yeah, and I hope that somewhere down the road we can continue to measure our impact in a more meaningful way, like checking our carbon footprints and all that. That would be amazing.
Awesome. Amazing things to aim for. And another really interesting thing about your label, which you've been making use of from the start, is the pre-order model. I'd love to know how this has worked for you and how your community has responded to this and where you hope to take it.
Yeah, so we started with the pre-order model actually as a way to bootstrap the business. So it kind of happened organically in a way, but we found that it was really quite a valuable way of launching our products because we were able to forecast demand and we could prevent overproduction. So that meant that we could order just enough fabric to make runs so that there wasn't too much leftover inventory and too much leftover fabrics as well from post-production. So I think that actually turned out to be a good thing. Yeah, I mean, obviously there are challenges. For example, I think people today are really spoiled by fast fashion. So there are customers who want products on demand and they're not willing to wait. So in that way, we've lost people along the way. And I guess in this current climate as well, with the pandemic, with all the shipping delays, it's made it harder for us to kind of estimate shipping timelines and made pre-order timelines really unpredictable. But I think if I look at it on a whole, a lot of our customers now understand pre-order and they understand that it takes time to make a garment. And we actually did a survey last year and we asked our customers if they were willing to wait. And actually, I would say, if I'm not wrong, 100% of them actually said they were willing to do a wait for an item that they really liked, which is really heartening. So in 2022, this year, we are actually going to move beyond pre-order to made to order. I really wanted to do this because I think it will add more value for our customers. We will be able to make pieces that are specially customized to their size, their height, and their styling preferences. And yeah, it will hopefully make the garments that we create even more special so that they will be treasured and they'll be loved for a long time.
That's really exciting. I think that, made to order is a whole nother level of coordination and logistics, mm-hmm. but I think ultimately it will go a long way to further reduce, you know, any potential fashion waste and really further streamline the designs that you're actually creating. And I think that's a really bold move, but at the same time, I think it's a natural move also, especially as you already have community who are, you know, used to the pre-order model. I think one challenge about the pre-order model actually is, and I'm not sure if you've heard the same thing, but a lot of our community want to try things on even though it's on pre-order. So it's not as easy to potentially shop online for pre-order, especially if they haven't bought from the brand before. Do you envisage, you know, when it comes to made to order or any further pre-orders, to have customers be able to try things on to get the fit right?
Absolutely. I mean, what you point out is really what we hear from our customers as well. Again, when we did the same survey, I think more than 50% of them wanted to try the pieces in the studio. And that makes sense. I think if you're investing in a garment, you want to be able to try it. And with made to order, the fit has to be good. So that's something we will be doing. I guess it would be like a hybrid model where we will have samples in our studio that our customers can go to try on and to go through a fitting process to see what customizations they want to do. Yeah, and have a sense of the fit, how it feels on their skin, how it wears, how it flows, before they actually commit to buying it. Who don't want any customizations and are happy to buy it off the rack, so they can still place the pre-order. So yeah, it keeps things a bit more flexible. People have a bit more option, but at the end of the day, there is a garment that is a bit more special and that feels like it's made especially for them.
Nice. Yes, and I know one of your big goals is, like you said, creating those signature styles and wardrobe heroes. So I think that, yeah, made to order is just a natural progression and is really going to, I think, take what you do to another level. I'm really, really excited to see that grow.
I am excited and nervous at the same time, actually.
Yeah.
It is quite
pressure.
Lots of pressure, but I hope it will. I think it, like you said, it feels like a natural progression. The way we're kind of redesigning our business model and the way we are launching our products, because we're moving away from capsules and focusing more on wardrobe heroes, like just launching one key product a month. So we really have to be very uncompromising about fit, design and just all of those aspects. I mean, we already are, but for us being a product-driven brand, we want to be even more uncompromising about those aspects of our design.
Amazing. And I do think that one thing that a lot of brands, you know, independent brands struggle with when it comes to customers is fit. So having that option is actually great to gather more data about fit from your community and at the same time serve them better. So yeah, really excited for that. And with that, obviously, you know, the made to order model, pre-order model, which you've been using previously, has helped you tackle fashion waste in your brand. And that's just one of the biggest issues inherent in the fashion industry, the rate of textile waste. And I know that, you know, pre-order has helped you to combat this, and your label's foundational principle is already producing less but better. What other ways have you found throughout your journey to tackle or to aim to tackle fashion waste?
So besides, I guess, trying to design waste out as much as possible through pre-order and made to order, we also tried to look at the entire life cycle of the garment. So for example, how can we help customers to extend the lifespan of their garments, which is why we launched our repair program last year to offer lifetime repair to Etsy garments for all our customers. So the aim is really to help keep these clothes out of the landfill for as long as possible. This year, we will be focusing more on that as well, to actually empower our customers to DIY their own repairs by creating videos and more resources that they can turn to. And I think that's a huge piece of the puzzle, because a lot of the textile waste actually happens at the end of the garment's lifespan, when a garment is damaged or worn and people choose not to repair it, or they don't know how to repair it, or they don't know who to look for to repair it. Yeah, and they dispose of it and ends up in the landfill. So with the repair program, we hope to kind of circumvent that a little bit. And I think also in the process of making a garment, there is also a lot of textile waste that comes from the fabric of cuts. So what we do is we collect all that fabric of cuts and we try to upcycle them into practical objects. So last year we actually launched face masks as well as little tote bags that people could use. And I guess it made them, it's also kind of an exercise to educate people and to remind them that there are a lot of good resources that get wasted in the process of making a garment. And yeah, it just challenges all of us to look at recycling and reusing all these resources in a meaningful way.
Definitely. I think that face masks, for one thing, was such a major way for brands to also stay afloat during the pandemic when people were buying less clothes ultimately and staying in. And I think that is a great use of excess material to be able to produce that, which is amazing. And I think that more and more of the time, especially when it comes to repairs, I think brands would do well to find ways to either create internal repair programs or maybe collaborate with like a third party or a repair service or company. There's not enough of those in Singapore. Of course, there's lots of tailors here locally, but I think that it's very scattered and a lot of people don't know where to go. So I think if brands can kind of try and find ways to take the lead on that, it could be a really great step to, yeah, reducing their own waste, helping customers extend the life of their clothes, and also, you know, just creating options to keep things circular.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, 100%.
And with that, I'd love to know, having worked in the sustainable fashion space for a while, do you feel that viewpoints are changing? And if you do, where do you see this movement headed and what's giving you hope?
Yeah, I think, definitely. I think viewpoints are changing. I remember when back in 2017 or 18, when we were both in Fashion Revolution, it was a really tough sell to people, you know, like when we were trying to advocate for even, you know, like getting people to ask where their clothes are made from. But I have so many more customers asking me where their garments are made and what it's made of, what's the composition like, how do they care for the garment. And even just being more considered about what they're adding to their wardrobe, like they'll be like, no, you know, I don't need another black top, which is great. So I think it definitely is shifting. This kind of ground up movement will hopefully kind of grow and encourage other brands who are not adopting sustainable practices to start, you know, looking at it and seeing that it is an important part of running a business.
Yeah, definitely. And hopefully with that comes less greenwashing and more actual meaningful action. I think that's the danger with, you know, sustainability trending more and more. I think through what we do in our work, we've definitely found more and more, you know, inbound inquiries and interest in what we do since back in the day when we first started. I remember that. And when we were on the Fashion Revolution volunteer team, our first event that we were holding in Singapore was a much smaller scale event than what we're able to achieve now. But I think that just is testament to charting the growth of interest in this space. And I think, like you said, our community, customers and people locally, internationally are just becoming more interested in knowing where things come from. And I think maybe the pandemic has contributed to that, like realizing that, you know, with sustainability being talked about a lot more, people are getting more curious and also, I think, more conscious of what they're spending their money on actually and value. And that is so important. And that's something that's giving me hope, for example. the way people are taking more of a conscious interest in value, because that's another thing that really comes into the sustainable fashion conversation, is what is value really? Is it, you know, the cheapest garment, or is it the garment that's going to last you a much longer time, that is made in a kinder, fairer way, you know, in a future-proof way, ultimately, right?
Yep, absolutely. I mean, I think with the pandemic, like people realizing that they actually don't need to consume so much, that's really making them go back to question the levels of consumption and the value that they're adding to their lives. And yeah, I do hope that this will shift mindset and encourage people to really look at value and see, you know, what it means, not just in a monetary sense, but from an overall perspective, how it impacts our planet and how it impacts other people.
Definitely. And I also wanted to ask you a question that has been on my mind for a while, and it's not an easy one for even me to answer. For a sustainably minded brand, it's a massive challenge to balance growth and green practices. What core principles have been guiding you as you expand? You started in Singapore and now you've expanded across to New Zealand, and you have all these amazing plans in 2022. What is guiding you through all of that?
Yeah, well, that's a difficult question. I get asked that.
Yeah, it's a bit of a personal one as well, but I think that it's probably really connected to who you are as well. But yeah,
that's a tough one. But I would say, I guess, as a brand, because we're quite product driven, as you can already tell with my obsession about getting things quite perfect, that's also one of the core principles, creating the best product. And I think because we are driven to, and we're quite incessant about, you know, like improving processes in our supply chain, putting our garments through wash tests, and doing a lot of tests to perfect the garments, I think that that principle really drives us to look at what we produce and what we put out as a brand, to make sure that what we put out ultimately does not compromise that value. And I think that's something that as we grow bigger as a brand, because it's at the heart of what we do, we will always want to put out the best product that, you know, will last a long time, and that is made, that's just of good quality. And I think, I mean, example of this was when we launched our permanent store in New Zealand. Yeah, instead of, you know, like just kind of having a store, we used this as a test bit and helping us to keep our ear close to the ground and really interact more closely with our customers to get feedback on things like fit, material choice, and to understand their preferences. So even as we grow, we still hold these values quite close to our heart. And I think the other principle or value that really drives us is our triple bottom line approach, which I think ties in quite closely with wanting to create the best product. But I think going beyond that to create good products that don't compromise on the environment and on humanity. So even though it's quite tricky to toe the line sometimes, by having that as our one of our core tenets, it always brings us back to, you know, like, what are we doing? Are we doing something that's doing less harm, and it's also benefiting, that can eventually benefit the planet, and that doesn't harm the planet? So I think that's another core principle that we have. And I mean, from a personal point of view, I am a huge nature lover. So being in New Zealand, being close to nature, I do see a direct impact on business growth versus the environment, like deforestation, urban sprawl, and all that. So it is quite a stark reminder that, you know, what we're doing should not come at the expense of the planet and, yeah, other people. And I think lastly, the last value I think that I hold quite close to my heart is that I believe that sustainability is a moving target. So yeah, we always strive for progress, self-perfection in that sense. And I think that can be seen in how we choose to structure our business to, you know, have goals to work towards and to be transparent and communicate about our progress. So that helps us to really look to, I guess, not while still being perfectionists, not be too hard on ourselves and to remind ourselves that we can always do better and we can improve and move the needle forward. So yeah, I think those are the three values that really kind of keep us in check, but at the same time, inspire us to move forward.
Yeah, I think that's a really healthy outlook as well, because I think that, again, being an independent brand with less investment than, you know, the world's biggest companies, it's not easy to navigate and chart that growth and know how to grow purposefully, meaningfully, while actually, you know, making a profit, while actually growing your brand awareness and, you know, moving in the right direction ultimately, because it has to be a sustainable business for you as well, ultimately, and for you to carry on doing what you do. And I think that having that core, those core principles, and getting really clear on that is one of the ways that you can really just, yeah, toe the line and keep yourself going, ultimately, because, yeah, entrepreneur life is not easy. As I think we know, maybe a lot of our listeners right now know, and yeah, it's a completely different ball game. So, but you're doing an amazing job. You know, I'm so proud of everything that you have achieved and, you know, the information that you're putting out there and the care, the level of care that you have. It's not something that you find often. So, yeah, I'm not sure if you hear that often, but that's something that always comes to my mind when I think of your brand. So
that means a lot. Yeah, I mean, coming from someone whom I really look up to as well. So yeah, it means a lot.
Thank you. And finally, then, to round off the conversation, I'd love to know, what does Made Better mean to you?
So Made Better sounds a lot like our goals for 2022, but I guess ultimately it's about creating products and operating and collaborating in a way that doesn't come at a cost or compromise on the environment and our humanity. So it's really on focusing on creating garments that are made with integrity and do less harm and hopefully more good.
Yes, less harm and more good. I think that's an amazing way to finish this wonderful conversation. Thank you so much for joining Made Better, and I can't wait to see everything unveil for you and Essie this year. And I'm going to be hopping on the made-to-order bandwagon. So yes, I cannot wait. I really can't wait for that. Thank you everyone for joining us, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks for tuning in to Made Better. If you enjoyed this episode, please help us spread the word. Share it on social media, with friends, or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. It helps more people find us. You can also read show notes of this podcast over on our website, Zerin.com. Zerin is a marketplace and media platform connecting you with independent, sustainable brands and content empowering you to consume more mindfully. You can also follow us on Instagram at Zerin_com, and you can find me there too, at Susanna Jaffa.